Welcome to Orange is the New Cast, the officially unofficial podcast for Netflix's hit show Orange is the New Black. I'm your host, Aaron, and joining me this week is
Cecily.
You might notice her from her stellar work on our True Blood Season 7 final season.
Stellar work finale. Is quite a word for it, but we did some things on a couple of podcasts together.
And also Season 2 of Orange is the New Black, and also
American Horror Story.
Or is that three?
Five?
Holy shit. Of American Horror Story. Freak Show. It's the Freak Show one. That's all I know for sure. And she's back. She's back. Helping me out tonight. Tonight we're talking about episode 305, entitled Fake It Until You Fake It Some More.
Yep, that's the one.
And this is also known as the one where we get the Flacka flashbacks. The Flackbacks.
That's good.
Thank you.
Wish I had thought of it.
I noodled on it for a while.
Can you edit this so I thought of that?
Done. Okay. What did you think of this episode? I thought it was kind of eh.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it set up some things to some dominoes to fall over. I always like seeing Flacka, and it's interesting to see her backstory.
Yeah, I guess I'm grateful for the fact that it at least kind of sort of rehabilitated Red. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was really worried that she was legitimately developing moon eyes for Healy.
Oh, yeah, that was scary.
This episode, it pretty much seems like that's a naked grab for the kitchen.
Yes, yes.
Which, and it does seem like that there might be some cracks forming in the Latina block in the kitchen there, too. Gloria doesn't have unity. Total unity and togetherness.
No, they seem pretty strong together without Flacka.
Well, Flacka.
So maybe they're even stronger now that the dissenter is gone.
Maybe.
Everything about that.
We'll see how that goes. Let's get right into the episode, shall we?
We shall.
Poussey is rewriting. She set a goal for herself of rewriting the entire library, reconstituting it based on nothing but the card catalog description.
And I want to read those books.
I think it sounds like pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's got a sci-fi mind.
It's got to be at least as good as 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, right?
I don't think. Yes, it's got to be much better. It's got to be like 100 times better than 50 Shades of Grey. In fact, I'm offended that you would say that Poussey's work would be that bad.
As bad as E.L. James?
Yes.
I don't know. Do you think that's one of the ones that'll have to be rewritten? Did that make its way into the prison library, 50 Shades?
We'll have to see.
Twilight? Lord of the Rings? I'm fascinated.
Yeah, we'll have to see if any fan fiction makes its way into the prison.
I mean, surely Harry Potter, because they're dropping all those sweet Harry Potter references. They could have picked those up on the outside, I suppose.
How hard is it to get books?
Apparently pretty hard for this prison, because Poussey is rewriting the entire catalog from scratch.
Well, I like the way she's wasting her time.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than maintaining the pubetropolises or the hair jungles that grow into the lady shower.
The hair nests.
Sounds pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
Full of bacteria and spiders. And just that's the season 6 of American Horror Story, I think. But there's a new rumored job crew with the new prison privatization that's paying $1 an hour.
An entire $1 an hour.
They're making 10 cents an hour now, so that's some big people money that they're going to be making.
It is. Do they get to keep all that money? Is it just like they don't take anything out of that? You get $1 an hour straight to your commissary?
I feel like that's the case. Or maybe, I mean, if you don't spend in your commissary, I'm sure that you can save that up and they'll write you a check for it when you get out of prison.
Yeah.
But I also bet that you have to pay taxes on it, which is kind of ridiculous.
When you leave the prison during when they
Although
pay
there's
you.
No way you'd make enough to actually qualify to pay taxes. You'd get it all back in a refund.
Yeah.
Plus you're like a kind of federal employee. I don't know how that all works, honestly.
Neither do I.
But if you take taxes out of a 10 cent an hour paycheck, then that is as close to satanic as I ever want to get to a person.
You wouldn't make anything. You literally would not
owe
have
the government
a,
money. Exactly. It's like the old company stores and the coal mines. So there you go. You know what? Also, Poussey is all about the liquor. It's 8 o'clock in the morning and she's trying to get her drink on. But it turns out that her stash has been robbed.
By
all of her disgusting prison hooch, which does look pretty damn gross. I mean, every time I've seen it, it looks like it's cornbread and oranges and tampons and week old sweet tea fermenting in a tube.
I kind of want to try it. Would you try it? These people drink it willingly. It can't be that bad.
But that's because they can't get booze in prison. Like, I don't
know. How do you
know.
Not get booze in prison, also? Side note, you get cigarettes hanging from the drain. You've got pounds of hair. Well, not pounds, but you've got heroin in the light fixtures. Someone's got to get some
you
real
think
cheap
those little,
booze.
Those little tourist bottles, those little, like, you know, wet bar bottles from hotels and airlines, those would be super popular because they're easy to sneak in. Yeah. I was thinking it's, like, hard to hide, you know, liquor because it needs a container and it's large. And But I guess a little trial size wouldn't be so bad.
Or you put it in a Ziploc baggie. And then, boom, you can just throw the Ziploc baggie away.
Or you just put it in your belly.
Or you save the prison food costs or other food supply costs by reusing baggies. I'm sure they'd let you just bring in liquor whenever you wanted.
So the inmates are talking about this new job opportunity. The COs are worried about changes with the new management. They're worried about insurance changing or just, you know... lots of concern, and Caputo downplays it all, of course, because, hello, people, did you not come through those doors to a paying job, whereas before is like, brush up your resumeville?
I think Ford should go to work for his niece. I mean, who pays a family member $50?
A sucker.
I've been giving away advice for free.
I was lucky if I got a Diet Dr. Pepper out of the deal.
Really?
Yeah.
I have been selling myself way short.
Would they give you Diet Pepsi? Sucker.
Worse, Pepsi Zero. What's it called?
Max.
Pepsi Max.
Dai is hiding out in the cooler because she's sweating from places she didn't even know she had, which is interesting on several levels.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever sweat from a place you didn't know you could?
No.
I've sweat from, like, the tops of my knees before.
Huh.
It's a weird
but
place to
But you knew you
sweat.
Had tops and knees.
I didn't know I could sweat there. I thought I could only sweat from, like, the underside.
That makes more sense.
My knee butt.
That makes more sense. No, I'm a sweater, and I've been a hairy dude since I've been 16. So,
you've always sweat everywhere?
I planted all the sweat flags that you can plant and all the terrain, and it's been conquered the name of Disgustia. Anyway, they're talking about the job opportunity. The girls are thinking maybe it's a fire crew, a prison-run fire department. That seems like a great idea.
What did you think
it was?
Center. What was your first impression about?
Well, I don't want to step on the feedbacker because there's a person that nails exactly what I thought there was going to go on.
Okay.
Which I thought was going to be a terrible idea, so I was pleasantly surprised when it was essentially a prison sweatshop. Mm-hmm. Hey. Brought it back around to sweat.
Yeah, there you go.
That's professional podcasting for you. Let's see. Gloria says, hey, nobody applies to this job. Regardless, we're going to keep the family together. She also scolds Norma for trying to bust out on her own and doing the whole eating eggs problem people business. She's practicing some Santeria, although she doesn't have a crystal ball. Maria comes over. And Flacca, they all come to blows over Flacca's claimed business skills and Maria losing her baby. It's just, she's been kind of chippy and on edge, and they get into kind of a nasty fight.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us to our first Flacca back. Flack back. She wants to deal drugs like her boyfriend, who looks like, you know, one of the Morrissey type fans.
Yeah.
That we've discussed so many times.
It's believable.
On the show.
He looks the older, college age.
Sure.
He's
slanging on the side. But she wants her own thing. Mm-hmm. She's listening. She's heard Beyonce. She knows she's just not going to be satisfied with just taking his table scraps.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets called downstairs. We find out her mom's a seamstress. And her mom's got a sweet little scam going where she sews fancy looking dresses just out of the magazine and throws on a Calvin Klein label and boom, big money.
Smart. How does this work?
I don't know.
Is it so that the people
I don't think Miss Rodriguez thinks that she's actually buying a Calvin Klein dress, but maybe she does.
No, I doubt it, or else she would have just gone to the store and picked one out.
You haven't paid thousands
of
dollars for it?
I think she ripped a picture out of the magazine and said, I want this, and probably asked for a label
so she could
show it to her friends.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. The label is for the admirer of the dress commissioner, not for the dress commissioner herself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess you're right. That seems, unless she's running some kind of thing where I work for the Calvin Klein factory and every once in a while I can stuff one of these in my lunch bag and bring it home.
Interesting. I wonder how much she charges for that.
I don't know.
For a knockoff.
Because, like, a knockoff handbag is ridiculously cheap.
Yeah.
When they retail for ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
So, like, if that's a $3,000 dress, I'd figure that she's selling it for, like, $100? $150, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, how much would you pay for just a well-made, handmade dress?
That's what I was thinking. Just, like, crafted it from her own hands and imagination.
How much would she need to make to actually make it worth her while? I don't understand the whole gray market,
It seems like if she was just selling her own creation, she can make a pretty good living for herself.
She can just get on Etsy, put some birds on it.
Put
some embroidered flowers on it. And
cut the fingers off everything.
There you go. There you go. Tear a hole in the sleeve where the thumb can be inserted. And you got Suzanne as a customer anyway. Piper is tired of electrical without Nikki, which explains maybe why this episode's not so good. We're suffering from a lack of Nikki.
Yeah. Everyone's still sad.
Have a Nikki deficiency. Red worries that her look is off-putting because, you know, she's going for the whole...
I never understood her look. The reason she's got, like, lines in the middle of her eyelid. Uh-huh. Have you ever noticed that?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the eyeliner doesn't even connect to her eyeball. It's just straight across.
It looks like she just stumbled out of a building that got shelled by the Germans in Leningrad.
She looks awesome.
Stalingrad.
Don't get me wrong.
Which one was which.
It's a very specific look only to Red on this TV show, but...
But it's not something that you're going to rope a dope like Helion with.
Yeah.
He's a little too marshmallowy. That prickly look is just not going to fly with him.
Mm-mm. But he already did like her.
He liked her in the sense of a marriage counselor. And yeah, you're right. It was the speech she gave. Yeah, yeah.
This is a good man. And
sure, because no one has ever told that to him in his life. So, but anyway, she wants Piper to help soften her. So Piper gives her some beauty tips about maybe not spiking her hair up and maybe smudging her. I didn't really understand it. It sounded like gobbledygook to me.
It made sense.
Flip a benzene, you know, reverse polarity of the deflector shield, that kind of thing. I wish they would give her some Janeway quips, just some nods, just some subtle nods to her pivotal role as first female captain on a Federation vessel.
Maybe she wants to be known for something else right now.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe you should respect this actor's talent.
I'm just
saying,
you can always fall back on the Trek nerds. The Trek nerds will carry you when all else has failed.
You know what? You've got Will Wheaton forever. He will always embrace that. So just, you have that, and just let's be done with it.
All right. Do you know who's P-Shy? Caputo's P-Shy, because he can't go in front of Danny, the new MNC prison management exec. Yes,
I thought it was just him being nervous seeing Danny and just sort of derailed him, and he saw an opportunity to talk to him about business stuff. I didn't think it was pee shyness.
I got it pee shy, but you're right.
He like had his zipper open as he was walking in. It wasn't until he saw who else was in there.
Huh. And he took the opportunity to try to get in good, but it just seems like that Danny, I'm not sure what to think about him because he seems like an idiot. But he just handles Caputo so effortlessly.
He does. Caputo's scared of him, and he's nervous, and he's very intimidated by Danny. Danny seems like he's full of shit.
He is full of shit. He seems like he has no idea how to do this job. And he talks about their system, but it seems like he has a little practical experience. Because I'm sure there is a way to run some of these systems, but Joe has a lot of good points about...
No, I mean, to me, he seems very capable. He seemed like he was really good at... managing employees. Handling employees is the word I'm looking for. Handling in the sense that he's telling Caputo what he wants to hear, like, yeah, I'm really glad you're here. I really value your input.
But acting as if all of that is
But
false.
He's gonna do whatever he wants to do anyway. But as long as he's making Caputo feel like he's heard,
yeah,
that I think that's what he's doing.
All right. Well, he does have some concerns about the prison economy and them, you know, because it does seem like a bad idea. You're going to have jealousy of people that are getting paid 10 times more than the others. And it's going to fuck up the commissary situation, which all seems like legitimate concerns. And hey, we need to get the old guard and the new guard together and talk through some of these issues. And Danny's like, you got it, buddy. I'll get right on that. And we'll see how that goes. The new softer Red goes to flirt with Healy. And he eats it up and compliments on her new lighter, softer look. When Birdie comes in to help, well, she wants help with getting a hole drilled in her desk so she can manage a court situation. And he stonewalls her, and Red's like, for fuck's sake, and tells her who to work with on maintenance. And then they kind of bond over the fact that she's too perky.
Mm-hmm.
And she just butters him up like a Christmas turducken. And then she has a slight misstep with talking about his irritable bowels. Irritable bowels. You know, she's hasn't flirted in a good long while.
This is what made me think that Red was actually flirting with Healy, is the way she reacted to saying that thing about the irritable bowels, like she had made a bad joke on a first date. And I thought that was...
You're right, it did play that way.
Like, kind of a vulnerability in Red that convinced me that she was looking to actually replace her husband.
Uh-huh. But it was more like, damn it, I missed my opportunity to ingratiate myself to this man.
Yeah, like I was playing him so well with the miss button and all of that, and then she made the poop joke.
Gloria is pissed that Norma's still stealing eggs. She's like, look, I helped you out this V thing, but Santeria is serious shit. And also I didn't give you permission to kind of start your own magic family. So she repossesses all of her voodoo shit and then
lets her keep the honey.
Cause Gloria just focuses her on those sad, sad puppy dog eyes. And mm-hmm. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Rub those puppy dog eyes in its honey?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-mm.
But can't yeah, Norma's got some layers to her.
Like an onion?
Like an onion or an ogre. Do you know what Flack has got?
What does she
got? Flack has got aspirations, and she's talking to, what is her name? I called her Marzipan.
Oh, Maritza?
Maritza. There you go. She's talking to Maritza about, like, you know, how she wants to get out of here, and she's got other things to do. And you can tell that Maritza's core feeling is that she thinks that Flack is going to be better than her, and she's like, yeah, I wear the apron, the kitchen apron, ironically.
Mm-hmm.
Which, what the hell does that even mean?
That's hilarious.
I mean, so I just wear this ironically.
I just want you to know that I'm doing this podcast with Orange is the New Black with you, but I'm really doing it ironically.
Oh, I had no doubt. But this leads us to another flackback.
It's cute. It's kind of like growing up.
Yeah.
It's like we could be together forever, just kind of messing around in the kitchen, or one of us could decide that we actually want to do something. And granted, it is prison, but I mean, I'm pretty sure all teenagers have this feeling when they graduate from high school.
Sure. Flack's aspiration, we see in her flackback, is that she's selling fake acid.
Genius.
And the teens come up and say that they've seen aliens and leprechauns and shit like that, tripping on her fake designer acid, which I guess this is the equivalent of teenagers smoking oregano or pencil shavings because they don't know any better,
yeah,
and saying how fucking wasted they are.
Yep.
It seems like it'd be hard to pull on a whole high school if you're selling out like all your blotter sheets and all that, but you know, whatever. But that's the thing. She's really thought this thing through, this scam, and she's got an answer for everything, it seems like.
For a second there, I thought that they were going to go with there was something in the ink that was actually getting these kids high or something like that. Like she was accidentally selling something that was really messing with people's minds.
That would be cool, and it also quieted my nitpicker because I'm not sure I buy the legal situation here.
Yeah, if it wasn't real drugs, then wouldn't it be a lesser charge just for
the kid dying is a hell of a thing, but on the other hand, if they cannot prove that she actually sold real drugs, the worst they can bust her on is this some kind of simple fraud
and
not even interstate fraud, just simple fraud.
Yeah, not to be cynical or anything, uh-huh, but the kid, when they first approached her, they talked about how the kid did have a history of depression.
Yeah.
So, I'm just saying, if you had a good lawyer, it's not that hard to talk yourself out of. But then again,
she probably didn't have a good lawyer.
Her mom is undercharging for those Calvin Klein dresses.
Yep. Yeah. Plus, she doesn't want that heat. She doesn't want any bright lights of anything shined on her knockoff Calvin Klein business.
Mm-mm.
Hell no.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, Caesar comes to visit Daya, and he says, hey, I can't find him. He's gone. He's abandoned his house. There was a grenade mug on the kitchen I thought was pretty cool, so I kept it for you, but probably secretly for himself. Seems like he's the kind of guy they'll forget to mention that when she's, you know, he's,
yeah,
got a grenade.
Someone who's telling a really cool story in the middle, and then they realize they weren't supposed to tell you that part.
Exactly. Oh, I got it for you. because
you would want that, but I'll hold on to it until you're out.
Yeah, and he says, hey, you're better off. You just had the one leg, losing fucking body parts. That's some irresponsible shit.
It's very irresponsible parenting.
And we see, kind of like we debated about whether he was a good dad or not, but it seems like his philosophy is, you don't split. You don't leave. It's your job to stick around. You can be a miserable human being. You can be a philanderer and all that shit, but you stay around. He says, even your piece of shit loser father stuck around till you were two. And then she mentions casually that he can take the baby while she's in prison. He kind of freaks out, but like in a single breath, in a single unbroken sentence, he comes back around to, yeah, I guess we can make this work out. One of Daya's little sisters, who's in junior high, sounds like she's going to have to drop out of school to take care of the baby. But that's his solution to it.
That's so much to ask someone to do for you. Don't you think?
No. And she's not down for it. But like you can, I mean, there's a reason why this family is dysfunctional and is generating intergenerational criminals, because they are not getting the education and the stable home life they need to flourish and find out what they really can be and be productive to society.
How many kids that Cesar has are his?
I don't know, because
are any of them his?
Because the other thing is, someone mentioned that Daya was his daughter.
No.
But I thought,
no,
this is a hazy season one memory, but I thought that when Alita got nicked, that he was fucking her. But it could have been some other dude.
Daya and Cesar?
Yeah.
I thought that was the implication too, or maybe there was just some flirting.
I thought they actually just showed it, like they were together. I thought
there was just some flirting and she was working for him, which is something her mother did not want to happen. That, you know, she's of course doing it in her underwear, so there was some flirtation involved.
Right.
That was...
maybe. I don't know.
What I thought it was.
I need to go back and watch season one when this is
over. But they showed us her father, not this season. Mm-hmm. And he says here, your dad left when you were two.
Sure.
So it's not someone we've ever met.
You're right. So it can't be his daughter.
Right.
So that, I mean, that means there's at least... There's at least one other mother and another father.
And he referred to Christina as her little sister.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I feel like all the girls younger than Daya are... Well, I mean, they're at least their half-sisters.
And the tiny little baby, that's...
That's the new side piece of bacon he picked up.
That's her baby?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was the first... Because
he says, I'm a dad now, and that's the side... Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if this makes a difference, trying to figure out the family tree of the situation, but...
Maybe there's other people wondering and screaming at the microphone, or screaming at their radios.
He does mention that, you know, maybe Bennett did love you, but love ain't stronger than Debul. And I looked it up, and apparently this is a slur that kind of means the same as the R word.
What's the R word?
Mentally deficient.
Mentally handicapped?
Yes. but in like a lot of different Slavic languages, it means stupid or slow. And then in Spanish, apparently it means slow or weak, stemming from the Latin debilis, which means feeble or weak, which is probably how we got debilitated and all that other stuff. But anyway, he's essentially saying love isn't stronger than being stupid. And I guess all men are stupid. That's the implication of that.
Is it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think he would accept himself from that. Or maybe he would. He said the kind of guys like everybody but me.
Yeah.
Because I take care of my shit. Look, I'm still around of all my kids and they drive me crazy.
Yeah, he's saying it's the expected thing for a man to not leave a woman with a baby.
This is the bare minimum.
For at least 2 years.
Yeah, for at least even a piece of shit will put in 2 years and 9 months.
Yeah, so no, I don't think he's saying that's a generality about men in general. It's just Bennett is debil.
All right. Anyway, Flocka shows up to testing day, and she thought it was going to be all interviews and roses, and she can just impress people with her mad fashion and people skills, but no, it's a standardized test, and that apparently is Flocka's kryptonite, because she just freaks the fuck out. In fact, I'm just going to cut right to it. She gets thrown out.
Yeah.
Maxwell snatches up her survey and sends her on her way. Which, again, it just seems like it's a personality test. It's one of those things that's kind of like tells you whether you're an ENTJ or an EMT or a BLT or, you know, a crusader or a helper or a fucking subservient piece of shit. I mean, these personality tests, I think they're fun and they're interesting, but they're about as useful as a Facebook, which Muppet are you from the Muppet Show?
Oh, you think so?
For predicting of like what you're going to get out of people. I mean, I don't know.
I took a class in middle school, junior high, and that class was the most educational thing I've ever taken.
You peaked in junior high, huh?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying. Anyway, this class was super educational, and we did a bunch of those tests, and I learned a lot about myself and what I should do as a profession. I didn't do any of those things.
Ah.
But I did learn a lot about myself and the world in general.
Did you?
I did.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to fight because I have to live.
You're
going to
fight me over saying that I got something out of one class out of my 12 years of going to school?
You are clearly outlining why that's a stupid proposition and why I would never, ever do that. My God. Am I debile or what? Come on, no? Yep. What, am I an asshole?
Yes, you are.
Anyway, there's a couple things I thought that was funny about Angie and Leanne making an either-or pact. Like, we either both make it or none of us does.
Did either of them get in?
Well, that's the thing. I was really expecting one of them to get in and then to turn on in a minute. In a minute. I'm really surprised it didn't go there.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Suzanne pondering out loud that I spend most of my time trying to understand things, which gave me a really how am I not myself from My Heart Huckabee's moment.
What were they trying to get at, though?
What do you mean?
I'm joking. Oh. It was a bad joke.
Okay. Is it still too late to fight you about your junior high experiences? Because I feel like you just opened the door.
You know, we've got an interesting piece of feedback about that.
Oh, have we?
Yeah, it's this finger right here.
Late submission. I didn't see that in the mailbag. Glad you brought it out for us. Anyway, we have another flackback. This time a guy is spouting a whole bunch of stuff about ancient history, and he's flunking out of school or some
and Western
stuff.
Civ.
Western Civ, that's what it was. Western Civ 5.
This guy could have used a more self-educational class in high school.
Probably. If he had known, you know, what he's going to do in life and not to stress about his Western Civ, he might not have taken a header.
Or an LGBT.
That's true. He might not have taken a header off of the high school.
But he did, so.
He did, and it horrifies Flocka. And apparently we understand that he's doing this under the influence of Flocka's quote-unquote acid. Then we have a scene of Red and Yoga Jones planting crops for Red's crop industry that she's got going out in the greenhouse now that she doesn't have the tunnel to run.
Very small garden.
It is. And Healy comes in chiding him about growing wacky tobacco and how he was abandoned as a child of 10 in the middle of Woodstock and how it was such a terror. And I assume that for chubby little Healy boy, Woodstock at 10 years old would be a bad, bad trip.
It sounds like Healy's entire childhood was a bad, bad trip.
Right, which I feel like should provide me a little nuance or understanding of him, but it still hasn't.
Right.
Still hasn't. Still nope. Think he is pretty terrible.
I don't think
and he's very good at making Yoga Jones super, super uncomfortable because she sees what's going on here.
Yeah.
And she feels like she just smothered in whipped cream and she can't get away.
You know, I remember Kelly talking about in your previous podcast, talking about character assassination on on the part of Jenji Cohen.
Right.
I don't think that there's anything you can do to redeem Healy for me.
Like, what if he saves a whole factory of kittens from a kitten fire?
I still hope the kittens claw him to death on their way out.
Into sheer panic?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, do you think that he could ever be brought back or redeemed?
No, because he's just, for two seasons in a row, he was truly awful. Mm-hmm. And he was truly awful to be in this season. And just the fact that he's warming up to a woman who, again, is a convict. And if they have any kind of relationship, it's a statutory rape situation.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he is softening up to a woman who is obviously blowing smoke up his ass.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't redeem him. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gingy.
I just wanted to feel you out about that.
Shouldn't assassinate his character so hard. It's you went overboard. You went the full, you know, Bay of Pigs Kennedy assassination package. And it's not working out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Black Cindy is taking up running because she's trying to get right with her mind and body. Kind of, sort of. I mean, I'm not sure why she started running. I thought maybe it was somehow to prep or to do a good job on this job interview, but that was last seen. So why is she running? Just for health?
I think we're just seeing a character growth in Black Cindy.
Mm. It's the sugar to make this spoonful of medicine we're going to get with Alex and Piper go down. Yeah.
It's kind of spontaneous, but I think it's stair-stepping. you know, first she wants to run for whatever reasons. Mm. She's already plucking her chin hairs. Mm, and
that's true.
She wants to get a better job.
Yeah.
People got aspirations in prison.
That's true. That's true. It's not just the Flaccas of the world. But yeah, Alex and Piper talk about that Alex is worried about this ethnic prisoner who she thinks is the Jasmine type.
Let's call her Princess Jasmine.
Yeah, Princess Jasmine. She's worried about Princess Jasmine because, of course, Kubra has sent her there to kill her. And she's giving her stink eye. And she's super paranoid. And I don't got anything more to say.
Because Princess Jasmine sat next to her while she took her test.
And also that she followed her onto the track.
Yeah.
And she's also looking at her for her looking at her. So,
yeah.
It's... Whatever, Alex. Whatever. Soso wants some help from this magic Norma business. And she quickly learns that Norma's magic is this, that she shuts up and listens, which is rare in this community.
It's rare for a lot of people.
True. Rare for me.
Yeah.
Soso has no friends, and I guess we're supposed to feel sorry for her, but she's violently off-putting.
She can't relate to people. That's why she doesn't have friends. Also, she surrounds herself with a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, like her, the people that she had these shallow, what she thought was meaningful experiences with, she is now turned off in the same way that the prisoners are turned off by her.
And she's blaming other people, which is a core problem.
Yeah. Next scene is Leanne and Angie there to collect some hooch, I think, and from Pusey, and she's begging off about why it's going to take her a little bit longer because she's had this supply problem.
I think they're just helping her make it. I don't think they realize how long it was going to take.
They're wanting her secret ingredient, which Pusey is like very violently opposed to giving out. Leanne speaks German.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that will be important through the plot later.
She also speaks in character, or not character, animal mashup names. Squawkoon.
Yes, the Squawkoon. That's what this title episode should have been titled. Squawkoon. That's better than this. What is Squawkoon and then
Rackquirrel?
Rackquirrel. I don't like the Rackquirrel.
Really? I like it the just Squawkoon. Rolls off your tongue. So
Rackquirrel.
Rackquirrel. I like Squawkoon better though.
In it, yeah, I like Squawkoon. It sounds a little more wacky, a little bit more fun. there's a dead squirrel in the tree, which I took to mean that the squirrels are actually, in fact, getting into her hooch and getting alcohol poisoning. Yeah. I was shocked that this was actually a tasty scheme to keep Pusey from drinking herself to death, I guess.
What is she doing with all of it?
You know,
pouring it out down the drain? That's horrible.
Here's the thing, like, except when Pusey's life was really bad, when she's getting beat down by girls and, you know, being alienated from her friends, I take it as gospel that she does have a drinking problem, but she never seemed like she really did have a drinking problem.
Yeah.
And now she's worried about Pusey, and Pusey seems like she's, I don't know, dealing with all this in a healthy way. Like,
maybe,
I felt like this kind of came out of nowhere.
I feel like in media, you always see drug and drinking problems when they're bad. Like, you see that. Because
if not, it's like, you know, a person has a beer.
It's not a problem. Wait, what do you mean you're addicted to meth? Your teeth are fine.
Yeah.
I think Tacy's a good friend for recognizing the problem before it's like, before it just debilitates your life. Even though she is in prison, and that's a perfectly legitimate reason to stay drunk. Tacy's being a good friend,
sure.
But she's not being the friend that Pusey needs. I think
I got the best job in the world, and I get drunk every day. I mean, it's just, you know, something that you can do. I don't have a problem. I can stop anytime.
But you do it with your BFF.
Not tomorrow. What?
But you do it with your BFF. So
sometimes
that makes
I drink
things
alone.
Different.
Unless the Lord counts.
Do we need to talk about this?
Not on air. No, I can stop anytime. It just won't be tomorrow or the next week or July, okay? Maybe August. We'll see. That's my can't be August.
You
that's my birthday.
You can't not drink
month.
On your birthday.
Yeah, so no, maybe September. Maybe September.
But that's Labor Day.
Yeah, Labor Day. And then October is my son's birthday.
That's Halloween,
and
too.
And then you got Thanksgiving.
Oh, you got to drink.
February.
That's my birthday.
God damn it. March. St. Patrick's Day. All right. Maybe April. We'll see how April goes. We'll see if April can be my liver month.
All right.
We'll see. Daya meets with Mrs. Pornstache, and Daya says, you can have it, being the baby inside her. And I guess I'm getting this big guilt complex from Mrs. Pornstache because she raised a bad kid who was just a bad seed, and I guess she sees her helping her grandbaby as a way to kind of atone for the mistake, which is Pornstache.
Mm-hmm.
But she wants, and the thing is Daya's like, I get it. You can have it. The reason she's pushing is because she's afraid she'll change her mind. And we learn that Daya can't sign paperwork before the baby's actually born, mm-hmm. which means we'll probably get a lot of episodes of this back and forth.
Can't wait.
Me neither. Because, you know, Daya is my favorite. Right behind Alex and Piper at this point.
I love Mary Steenburgen. Is that what it?
She's good. She's better than Justified.
Also, can I just point something out?
Yeah, what?
Because I want to do this.
Do it.
Her jewelry throughout this entire season
is on fleek.
It all coordinates.
Ah.
She's wearing all this natural stone jewelry, but it's not the same pieces. It's always like a different bracelet, earrings, necklace, but it's all the same sort of theme.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently she's super rich.
If anyone knows where to buy coordinating jewelry in that many different shapes, sizes, and colors, Redison. Specifically to Aaron.
At orange@baldmove.com.
But I just thought it was a nice, I don't know.
Touch.
Visual of her character that she's that her together. Life is so neat and orderly, yeah, that even her jewelry matches when it doesn't. I don't know.
So the new work orders are released on the bulletin board, and Black Cindy and Janae got the nod, and Piper Suzanne is all pissed that she didn't get it, and she starts doing her head slapping thing, and Tasty comes over to smooth things over.
Like Black Cindy's line, of course fucking Chapman got it.
Yeah, right. Like they always assumed.
Yeah.
Flocka got it too, even though she completely flamed out of the test, and we're already like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What is going on with her? We won't have to wait long to find out.
No.
Alex is still stressing about Princess Jasmine. Piper teases her that maybe she's the girl on the inside because of a lot of stupid tinfoil type reasons, and Alex just fucking goes ballistics and says, you have to tell me. And Piper, to her credit, calls her out on the ridiculousness of like, oh, you want me to promise you that I'm not here to kill you.
What if the season ends with Piper actually being the one who was sent to kill Alex?
Is it a murder-suicide? Because yes, I want that's...
I think, you know what, I think I would buy back into Piper's character if she did that.
She did some, like, gangster shit?
Yeah, she didn't get out, but she was contacted. She's still super pissed at Alex. She's been
rope-a-doping her this whole time.
Yeah, so
I can get down
she's
going to
shank Alex, and then she's going to go out, and she's going to be the big-time drug dealer that Alex was.
Yeah.
And just kind of embrace her badness.
You know...
She's this waspy person who's pretending to be this good girl who does nothing wrong, so I think her embracing that by the end of the series would be interesting.
I know Kelly and Tom had this meme on Downton Abbey, their Up Yours Downstairs podcast. During season 3 and 4 of Downton, they had the Shank Bates meme.
Yeah.
We should get a Shank Alex.
Yes.
Shank Vaz.
I like it.
Keep calm and Shank Vaz. We'll look for those in the merch section of the well, what, no, no one does that. Anyway, Pusey is now using her stand and deliver contraption that she invented last year.
Refined. That technology is perfect. She's got nice materials. It's sturdily built.
It is super fun peeing standing up outside where you can just like kind of go crazy with it.
Yeah.
And then snow. Well, and one of the pleasures of life, writing your name in the snow.
You'll never know that feel.
Well, you could get to stand and deliver. It looks like you need some black hose and a bleach bottle.
Why's it got to be black?
Well, they're... They've got the black hose has the sizable girth and length advantage. As I mean, did you see that thing swinging down to her knees?
It was good.
You don't even need to aim. You just have to let it dangle and sway. Yeah. So that's why I would recommend
the
black hose. Anyway,
you recommend black hose?
Any chance I can get. So she's doing this to set up. She's setting up traps and she's trying to protect her stash because she's now all in on the Chippendale Rescue Ranger scheme. The COs are mad because their hours got cut, in some cases by half, which this is like their worst fears coming true about this place.
What was the point of showing their relationship immediately before their hours getting cut?
I think they're trying, because up to this point, we haven't really cared about the COs, other than just pure comic relief. And I think that Gingy must have felt that to buy the stakes of the COs getting their hours cut, that we need to know them better as people so we can see that they're buying secondhand couches and they're planning expansions for their houses and they have relationships and this is impacting real people.
So why wouldn't they show characters that we can relate to? Because showing Healy and O'Neill and
I like O'Neill.
Female guard.
Maxwell?
No.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
What is her name?
I don't know.
showing them outside of the prison and their lives makes me care less. Don't get me wrong. I like O'Neill and his lady companion.
Yeah. But I like them when they're in the prison doing funny prison stuff. You're right. She did not do a good job of transferring her feelings.
Yeah. If you showed Maxwell going home and being a lonely woman the same way that So-So is feeling right now, then that's relatable. Hmm. You show me Ford and his family and how much he stresses out. Show him not being able to sleep next to his wife at night. Then you've got.
I wouldn't mind seeing his niece shaking him down for $50 to help out to signing up for his drugs prescriptions online.
Yeah,
that'd have been fun.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Some of this stuff just didn't quite come together.
I just wasn't sure what the point of that was. But
there's an amusing scene where we find out that this is all Tasty's plan to destroy Poussey's stash and keep her busy and not drinking. And Black Cindy says, you got to come clean because it's going to bite you in the ass, which is probably true. And Suzanne worries about Poussey's animal traps being humane. And you see Black Cindy's like, oh, yeah, it's like cartoon box with a stick type of deal. I don't know. There's nothing much more to say about that scene.
It's actually kind of exactly what it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
we don't see her set any traps, imagine that Poussey is the kind of person who would set a humane trap like that.
It could be, but I bet you get your hands on some rat traps in prison. Easy.
She wouldn't do that, though. It's Poussey.
You know, this is her honey stash. She's going full-on militant Winnie the Pooh. Anyway, you know what? Red has an overwhelming need, a drive, a hunger. She's missing the heat that comes from real passion. And Healy, a sporting, like, you know, a reasonable chub, is getting excited, but then
about
he realizes...
the idea of stimulation.
Exactly. About this passion, this Soviet Barris unleashing her passion on him. And he realizes she's talking about the kitchen and that she's been using him this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how that goes. Because it's not like he's never used her for his own selfish needs before.
During the course of this argument, she made a really cruel jab at Jimmy's character, I think. She said, I don't want to be wandering around with underwear on my head.
I don't think that's a cruel jab. It's more like the cautionary, like, I don't want to end up like that.
I'm just saying how Jimmy ended up was they dumped her on the side of a street, and now she's wandering around, maybe dead somewhere in the city.
Uh-huh.
I just think it was too soon for that.
Okay.
So you don't want to end up like Jimmy.
Yeah.
That's awful. Shoot, Jimmy was her friend.
I get it, but...
So this episode's all about bad friends and aspirations.
I've always been within Red's character because, yeah, like, you know, like she gave the speech about Miss Rosa.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fucking over-synthemalize.
Not over-synthesize.
Don't over-synthesize this. I've been drinking too much of Poussey's honey. It's not April yet, people. It's not April yet. But yeah, no, I thought it was within her character and I didn't have a problem with it because it's not like Jimmy's a terrible person. Oh, ha-ha, it's Jimmy. It's more like... shit, I don't want to end up. I got to be stimulated. I got to keep on my mental game. I got to keep this iron sharp up here.
I think the difference between making a joke about Jimmy and sympathizing with Jimmy's plight is saying that she would wander around with underwear on her head, which is not something that we saw her do. Saying that I'm going to end up wandering the streets without my mind would be sympathizing.
See, that was a low blow making the underwear crack.
Just saying anything about Jimmy's state of mind, I thought was kind of cruel.
Okay.
Cruel.
So-So tries to bond with Leanne and Angie with disastrous results. First, she tries to draw an analogy. I'm having real trouble here. She tries to draw an analogy between her job as trying to get an RA in college, which, you know, she says college, and they're like, whatever. And then she talks about... tries to bond over some woman in Iran or Iraq or maybe Pakistan getting stoned for adultery. And the girls are like, don't give a shit about that. We like getting stoned. Then she tries to bond with them, which she should have started with the marijuana. Let's be honest. She should have started with the wacky tobacco.
She never started talking about. Okay, go on. Please go on.
But it's just too late. And then she tries, which I thought was almost an aggressive mood. She tries to relate to them over Walmart.
Yeah.
And it's so condescending that I almost feel like it was played like So-So's like, well, this isn't working, bitches. So now I'm going to really talk about your people in a very offensive, stupid way. What did you make of that?
I thought it was a woman who was trying way too hard to make a connection when there was absolutely nothing there. So she thought
the Walmart shit would work.
She thinks of these women as white trash. And when you think of white trash, you think of Walmart. And you think that they have to...
Always.
They have to coincide.
Okay. So I think of everyday low prices I think of Walmart. I don't know about you.
I think I'm white trash.
Flocka announces to her people in the kitchen that she got the job in... I think she was trying to be nice, but Gloria's pissed because she disobeyed her. And also, she thought she's come crawling back. And, you know, like, she kind of big time, we'll talk about your punishment later. And Flocka's like, actually, you know, I got a different job. And then she allowed Gloria to bait her into, like, making everyone think that she's better than them. And Flocka doesn't know how to, like, kind of talk her way out of situations. So
That she had any reason to. She had every right to say what she did.
No,
she came to them and she was being nice and she wanted to be friendly. And she has every right to do whatever she wants
to do. You're right.
I'm just saying that Gloria came at her crazy.
I agree. But because she doesn't know how to handle that, she ended up being super aggressive in a way that caught the other girls in her collateral damage. Like, by the end, she's like, I am better than all you bitches. Fuck off. And that's not what she wanted to come there to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Right
before she said nobody, she looked right at Maritza.
And it really, you could tell, like, she had tears in her eyes. It hurt poor Marzipan.
It hurt me to watch.
So
sad.
She's just crushed. My favorite
duo is breaking up.
Which that leads us to another wildly popular flashback. The cops come to arrest her for drug dealing, and she tries to protest that my drugs were fake. And they're like, we don't care because it killed a real kid. And I'm not really sure about the legalities of this, but whatever. This is how she got in prison. And
I need to see warrants. I need to call my lawyer.
That's the other thing. She should have kept her fucking mouth shut because she just gave them their case, essentially, going out the door.
Yep.
Fucking... don't
fucking teenagers don't know how to get arrested properly.
Don't talk to cops. Ask for a lawyer.
Always. No, say nothing.
Official bald move position. anyway, see Caputo and Danny, and he's kind of like, hey, I see what your system here with this test is like, this kind of crazy. And Danny reveals that they don't even read the results. It's solely there. It's kind of like in the Matrix way. It's there to provide a sense of control over the girls. So they're not mad at them for not getting the job. They're mad at themselves for not having what it takes to cut it, which...
It's pretty smart.
Well, it's also very cynical way to prey on girls in a prison system.
The original equal opportunity employer.
Random selection?
Yeah.
RNGesus? Sure. What? Sure. Random number generator. RNGesus. RNG.
RNG.
OMG.
I said the phrase RGN to you earlier, and you acted like I didn't know what to...
That's because using the context, I thought you were making some other acronym, and also I'm dyslexic, and also I'm kind of slow. Okay. Kind of slow sometimes.
Okay, I digressed, but I had to... Okay.
Sure. Anyway...
This is where I realized that Danny was full of shit, because he was saying, well, you know, I'm really glad to have you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Anytime your boss is calling you buddy, you should realize you're being snowed. You really should.
Isn't that kind of effective, though?
Yeah, super effective, because it's a way to, you know, socially engineer a situation where you use people's natural inborn genetic coding to play nice and get along against them.
Are you saying I'm a sociopath for doing so?
To the extent that you do, maybe there's some socio, maybe there's some path in there. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist.
Okay.
But anyway, Caputo's worried that, like, your system doesn't take into account arsonists and dangerous criminals and maybe not give them sharp objects. And Danny's like, you're right. I'm glad we have you here, just like you said. And I think at this stage, Caputo is beginning to realize that he's being manipulated.
Yes.
He's wearing, like, I might not quite understand how and why and where, but I'm being had.
No, I think that in this moment, he's understanding that these people who are coming in to make changes aren't necessarily making changes for the better.
Mm-hmm.
That they're just making changes for
their
money
own selfish need, yeah.
With no regard to the prisoners themselves.
So the big reveal is that the girls are making panties, designer panties, in a prison-based sweatshop. And the funny thing is that, you know, this brings it back to the first flock back where her mom was a seamstress, and she, you know, she intended Flacca to follow in that tradition, and now she's here stuck in front of the sewing machine and getting paid $1 an hour for it, and she just can't fucking believe the irony of the universe.
The universe was really doing it ironically.
It turns out she's a TMJ living in a TGIF world.
TMJ?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
That's a lockjaw thing people get where their jaws click, and I guess it's excruciating.
Doesn't it mean too much jaw?
Too much jaw. Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, that's the episode. Fade to black. Mama said there'll be days like this. And she did. She literally did. She
Puff tried to out.
If you would like to send us feedback, you can do so at orange@baldmove.com. We've got a two-person mailbag today. A short and sweet one and a long and analytical one. I can't wait to hear what you think about them both. But yeah, you can go to at orange@baldmove.com. Please send in the episode number or title in the subject line so I can keep all this straight when I'm compiling feedback. And it'll help me do that. And you can also discuss the stuff on forums at baldmove.com. Forums.baldmove.com. If you go to forums.baldmove.com, nothing happens. Nothing good anyway.
You just send us your, just whatever you're thinking about. Send us your favorite color, your shoe size, your best friend.
Where you can get coordinated jewelry.
Your likes and dislikes.
Natural stone jewelry.
What kind of Disney princess are you are on a TMJ? Facebook.
Or are you what kind of Muppet? We're interested in all those things. Send us all the send Facebook personality the tests and send that in to us. We should all take the which Orange is the New Black character we are.
We should.
Because I will kill myself on air if I get Piper. What and I kind of think I would.
Kill yourself on air?
No, I think I would get Alex or Nikki. I'm shooting for Nikki.
It's the heroin addiction, I think.
And she's all about the pussy. And funny. And good with electrical things.
And stuck in maximum security for the rest of her life.
You know who's not? Anne LW. She sent us a postcard from the Edge. She says, maybe I'm insane, but I definitely thought the rumored new job was going to be hiring the selected inmates as replacement assistant COs. It was so suspicious. First, there's a bunch of foreshadowing about how willing the new management company was to make bad decisions. Then there was a personality test as a screener. Then they were cutting the COs to part-time. What better way to make money, and what a terrible idea to have just one or two CO supervisors and a bunch of inmate hall monitors to back them up. Besides, that would be a pretty effective system to keep the complaints down, wouldn't it? And I was right on your wavelength, and I thought that's exactly where things were going with this job.
And I remember you said that while you were watching this episode.
I mean, it sounded like the Milgram, I think, is what the Stanford prison experiment. I thought that they were going to explore some really dark corners of the human condition.
That was
going to
be my next question. Oh, well, not that specifically, but I want to know more about that. Is that something that people do? They actually have...
I don't think so, because it seems like that's just not legal. The liability.
Well, it's interesting that you and Anne came up with the same sort of idea. Like, maybe this has been done before?
I just think the way she lined that stuff logically, that it seemed like they were building to something like this. But no, I don't think there's any real life. The Stanford experiment I'm talking about was a psychological test they did, I think, in the 60s, where they took... I think 20 student volunteers, and they randomly divided them up into prison guards and inmates. And they made the prison guards, they wore like sunglasses and wore like a uniform, and the prisoners wore like, you know, jail clothes. And the guards were not really given any specific tasks other than to like keep them on a particular schedule, mm-hmm. and have them do tasks at a certain time. And within short order, the prison guards turned to like psychopaths, and the prison inmates, the fake prison inmates, turned like showed all the classic signs of depression and dehumanization, things like that. Now, there is a lot of bullshit about this experiment, lot of like things that are dodgy about it. But I buy its general premise that you put people in control and tell them that they are in power and that these people are one down from them, then that. Really bad things happen from that kind of social dynamic, but yeah. So that's it's interesting. There's a nice stepping stone Wikipedia article if you just go Stanford prison experiment, and you can see the good and the bad about it. But yeah, no, I thought that's what it was going to be. Although I gotta say, I don't know how plausible that would be, because it just seems like there's a lot of problems on the face of it. And I kind of like the sweatshop. the sweatshop panty thing. I like that as an angle.
Can I say something that probably everyone is thinking?
Go for it.
How is it possible that you can just sell human beings to a company to make products for you?
I mean, they've been doing that forever.
I mean, like, it's prisoners one thing to working have, on like, roads a federal and... institution where you're rehabilitating people. You're
like making license plates or pounding rocks or whatever.
Sure, but to then just have a prison that's government run suddenly be bought by a private corporation that can do anything they want with these people's lives.
I mean, there's some fucked up shit. Like, that doesn't seem like right. Prison rodeos where the prisoners are, you know, not forced, but they're allowed to compete in very dangerous rodeo type games that people like wager on it and shit. There's prison boxing leagues. They're like, even now there's things that the prisoners make that's just for, you know, it's essentially slave labor. So, and then again, like, you know, you got these MMC is definitely supposed to be like a CCA type of deal. Where you already have large corporations making money off of imprisoning human beings. So squeezing some extra revenue out of them and giving the prisoners valuable life skills and giving them extra money. I mean, it's one of those things where everybody wins and therefore no one does.
It's kind of like flying the Confederate flag outside of a courthouse.
Yeah.
It's like everyone knows that that's not right. So why are we still doing it? Like sending Nikki to maximum security instead of sending her to rehab where she should be going.
You know, sometimes I get cynical about this stuff because, like, you know, the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage throughout the land. Yeah. And I'm super glad about it. Mm-hmm. I unironically. But then I see this rebel flag situation. I'm like, oh, Jesus, is this going to be the thing that we're supposed to fight about for the next decade? Like,
it's already happened once.
But what I'm saying is, like, with abortion and gay rights and gun control, and now this dance, it's like every time you retire something, like, okay, now can we fix Social Security? Can we fix the prison industrial complex? Can we talk about the insane war on drugs? Can we talk about our foreign policy? Nope, it's the rebel battle flag. We got to worry about that now. And I'm like, you're right. It seems like it's so obvious that there is a right side and a wrong side, and it should just be dealt with and moved on. But no, like, I could totally see this being some bullshit culture war that goes on for another 10 years to distract us from other larger societal problems that they can wheel out. Because, I'm going to sound like an insane lunatic, so I'm just going to stop here.
No, go for it.
But I just feel like, you know, like, the rich and powerful, do they care if gays get married or not? I don't think they really do.
Depends on what's in it for them, I guess.
I mean, but I don't even think the politicians I classify as rich and powerful because they work for the other rich and powerful people. So they don't care about that stuff. They care about, like, labor law, and they care about, you know, big issues like foreign policy and wealth redistribution. So that stuff we don't get to talk about and have honest conversations, but they'll let us talk about rebel battle flags and gay marriage and abortion till the cows come home because they don't really care. That's like some conspiracy level shit, and I don't really believe it, but goddamn, it seems like it really accurately describes what goes on in this country sometimes.
I can't help but agree with you.
Anyway, Emily G wants to talk about an issue that we raised, Pilani and I raised last podcast.
Let's do it, Emily.
She says, I won the way on a discussion of sexual abuse by male and female authority figures and the similarities and differences between the two. As a feminist, I believe in the definition of feminism, which states that no one should be treated differently just because of their gender. This means accepting that sexism harms men as well as women and trying to identify and change the ways that it does that. I believe a man should be able to discuss his feelings without fearing ridicule. I believe men can be victims of abusive relationships, and I believe that as a woman, if you expect to put the toilet seat down for you, then you should also put it up for him. With all this in mind, I still believe there's a big difference between female and male teachers and guards and authority figures in sexual abuse. For one thing, there's the public humiliation angle. A girl who has sex with her male teacher is likely going to be seen as a victim and pitied, or seen as a slut and shamed for it. A boy who has sex with a teacher is going to get high fives from all of his buddies, and no one is going to pity him or think he did something immoral. The boy can still find the event traumatic, but at least he did sort of leave it behind him, where the girl will be reminded everywhere she goes by the looks of sympathy or distaste she gets. That's a good point, that the trauma of the primary infraction is the same, but the secondary trauma that girls go through with the stigma about, you know, female sexuality and all that is you know, again, like I talked about last podcast, guys get high fives and, oh, I wish we had teachers like that when I was from, where girls get pity or scorn.
And it doesn't even have to be as an extreme an example of having sex with a teacher or some sort of authority figure.
Yeah.
I feel like that same thing applies if you have sex with anybody.
Sure.
That if, but we're talking specifically about how it relates to Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. And like my.
But yes, I think if someone finds out about a girl, a teenage girl having sex with a teenage boy, then those same things are going to play out.
Yeah. Emily continues, another thing is the likelihood of a woman using threats or violence or physical intimidation as coercion is significantly less than that of a man. Statistically, women tend to use different methods in getting what they want out of people. Those methods may not be the most savory or ethical, but no one has ever been arrested for emotional manipulation. Finally, there's the fact that physical damage is less common in male rape victims of female rapists than vice versa. In most cases, both male and female victims walk out of the situation with emotional scars, but more often women walk out with actual injuries. I don't know if that's true or not, but it makes sense. You know, the whole average size and strength of a man versus a woman being what they are. She wraps things up by saying, I'm not trying to downplay the trauma of male victims because I do believe that they are victims and their emotions should never be waved away. But I think putting female rapists in the same category as males is ignoring facts and the state of the patriarchy we are still living in. So I guess if I can paraphrase Emily, she's saying, in a perfect world, we would treat these as identical crimes. But there's rational basis for seeing them as different in the world that we live in. And I guess, you know, that's the classic question is, do you live in the world that you actually live in, or do you try to live in the world you want to be in? Are you trying to be the change that you want to see in the world? And that can take you to some dangerous places, I guess.
Yeah.
It takes you to places where you can actually expose yourself to real harm and ridicule and all that kind of stuff.
Being the change you wish to see in the world?
Yes.
Yes. It's a very complicated subject.
Do you have anything else to say on the matter? Because I thought that was essentially the exact same thing I was arguing, only I, instead of thinking on the spot, she sat down and wrote an email. I should have sat down and wrote an email to myself before the show so I could have really gotten all my feelings out and my thoughts.
Got a lot of feels about this.
I do.
I respect that. And I think you're valid for having those feelings. Because
it's like, that's the cognitive dissonance. Like, I know it's wrong to think this way, but my gut and my brain are both telling me the same thing, which is like, eh, you know.
Yeah, it's true. I think in most cases that's absolutely true. I mean, I'm 6'1".
Right.
And I can be physically intimidating to a lot of people, but sure. I still feel physically intimidated walking down the street at night by myself.
Sure.
So I think it's perfectly valid, as well as it being possible that women are rapists just as much as men.
Uh-huh.
Well, not just as much. There's a lot more going on by you guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing to talk about, too. Like, men that get sexually assaulted and raped by women are less likely to view it in that context and lens.
Exactly. For the same high school argument that she made.
Exactly.
Earlier.
So it's like, I don't know if that's actually...
Is that you're supposed to be proud... Men are supposed to be proud of all the sex that they get, while women should feel ashamed for all
sure,
of it.
Sure, sure.
Outside of the holy bonds of marriage.
Anyway, thanks, Emily. That was very articulate, and I think you hit a lot of the nails right on their heads.
All you Arlene haters, there it is, right in your face.
There's your True Blood fan service, your Twoo Blood, Twoo fan. Yeah, so thanks for listening to another hour of our Orange is the New Black cast, or an Orange is the New Cast Black, whatever. If you'd like to send us some more feedback, you can do so at orange@baldmove.com. Again, please remember to put the episode number or title in the subject line, or you can get on the forums and talk with us there at forums.baldmove.com.
And you can also send us pictures of your animals.
Sure.
Putting that out there. Cat pics, dog pics, turtle pics.
Love them all.
Love them all.
So yeah, we'll hear from you yet another time before the season is over and maybe for the wrap-up cast. Thanks for joining us again, Cecily.
You're so welcome.
Until the next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Have a pleasant evening.
And a wonderful tomorrow.